continued his she-owning Gemara. Until now, for the past couple of shiurim, we learned the Gemara shiur from Shas Yerushalmi. Today, we revert, we go back to Shas Bavli, but first, just another couple of sayings from Yerushalmi, then we go back to Bavli. The Gemara says, Yerushalmi, that King Antoninus, king of Rome, was very close to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Yehuda Nasi. And he studied together with him, he learned Torah from him. He had a special tunnel going to his house where he studied. One day, Antoninus asked Rebbe, he was called. Yehuda Nasi was called Rebbe. He asked Rebbe, tell me, in the future, in Olam Haba, the Jews eat from the Leviathan. There's a special fish, a whale called Leviathan. The Torah says that Olam Haba is a Seudat Tzadikim, the feast for Tzadikim, is eating from this Leviathan. You're going to be there. You're going to be one of the leading souls in Gan Eden. Will you give me part of that Seudah, this Leviathan? In other words, will I receive Olam Haba? Rebbe answered, yes, definitely. You'll be in Olam Haba, you'll be in Gan Eden, and you will have part of that Seudah. Doesn't mean, of course, physical eating. Antoninus said, if that's the case, then I have a different question to ask you. How come that I ask you now, can I eat from the Korban Pesach on this world, which is much less than eating from the Leviathan, and you say, I can't? Why is it that the Korban Pesach I cannot eat from this sacrifice in the Holy Temple, and something so much holier, so much greater, later on I could? Rebbe answered, what can I do? It's not because of the fact that you are bad that you cannot eat from the Korban Pesach for the sacrifice. There is a special pasuk in the Torah which says that kol orel, any goy, or even a Jew who did not have a brit milah, who was not circumcised, is not permitted to eat from this sacrifice, this Korban Pesach. Even if a person is a good Jew, even if he's not circumcised and he is still a tzaddik, for instance, the Torah says that if two children are born, two sons, and they are both circumcised and they both die because of the circumcision, the third son that is born is excused from Brit Milah. He is not to be circumcised because certainly he will die like his brothers. Therefore, he's allowed to live as a Jew and not be circumcised, and it's not considered a sin. But at the same time, because he is not circumcised, he cannot eat from the Korban Pesach, from the sacrifice. So, therefore, the point that you cannot eat from this Korban is because you are not circumcised. Not a bit milah, because you're a goy, for whatever reason there is, but you are still an adel. When Antoninus heard this, the Gemara says he instantly went away. He had himself circumcised, did be converted, and he said, now I can have both the Korban Pesach. Of course, there was no Korban Pesach at the time. This was after the Chumash Beit HaMikdash, meaning that symbolically I have a right to eat for this Korban if it was here, and also I will have Gan Eden. And of course, the Gan Eden will be a much greater one as a Jew than as a goy. Chassidei umot ha'olam, which means goyim who are good, who obey the mitzvot that is required of them, they too receive Gan Eden, but their Gan Eden is on a much lower level than the Gan Eden of the Jews. Finally, Yemena says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya sent Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Yesa, Rabbi Ami to go out through the cities of Eretz Yisrael to improve conditions. What conditions? To see. Improving conditions meant they go out to all the cities, investigate and see that there are rabbis there to teach the children. The basic, the foundation of a Jewish home is the child. The child learns Torah, that child will grow and have a home of his own that will be, will perpetuate the religion. The first one to be concerned with is the child. And what the child needs is a good rabbi, a good teacher. But they go out and see that there are yeshivot for children. They went to different cities. Even as they came to one place, they did not find any rabbis there that would teach children Chumash or Mishnah of any kind. They were shocked. So they said to the leaders of the city, the ones who welcomed them, bring us the Nature Karta. This is where the word originates from. It's in Yerushalmi. Bring us the Nature Karta. Nature Karta means those who guard the city. These people went, they brought the sentinels, those that guarded the gates. They brought them, and the rabbi said to them, these are the Nature Karta, the guards of the city. These are Charuvei Karta. These destroy the city. So they said, well, who is the Nature Karta? They answered, the Nature Karta are only those who teach Torah, see that Torah is obeyed. The ones that spread Torah, they are the ones that guard the city because they see to it that the city has Kiddushah, and then the city can have a Kiyum, it can exist. Why is that so important? The letter says because we find that the three worst sins possible are Avodah Zarah, idol worship, Gilui Arayot, the sin of adultery, Shvichat Damim, murder. These three worst sins, we find a pasuk where Hashem says, I will condone these acts. I will forgive them. Better said, I will overlook them. I'll completely disregard them. But I will never disregard the fact that the Jews refuse to learn Torah. If a Jew has the ability, has the opportunity to come to place of Torah to learn, and he refuses, this I will not overlook. This I will never forgive, Hashem says. And therefore we find this in the Pasuk. Hashem says that, why did I destroy Israel? Why did I drive the Jews out and away from me? Not because they left me and they worshipped idols, but al azvam et Torati, because they left my Torah. Meaning, Hashem says, let them leave me. Let them just learn Torah. Even the Sa'or, which means the chametz of the Torah. The bad part of Torah, too, is that good. Even the bad part will bring them close to me. Return them to Hashem. What is meant by the bad part of the Torah? There are two ways to learn Torah. One is limud Torah lishma, learning Torah for the sake of the mitzvah alone. The other is Torah shelo lishma, learning Torah not for the sake of Torah, but for the sake of a person's own kavod, the sake of a person's honor. He wants to be called rabbi and to receive kavod. This is learning for the wrong reason. That's called shelo lishma, or bismola, or shevi kavod. Smola is the letters lo lishma. So a person like that, that's the chametz of Torah. So Hashem says, learn Torah, the chametz in it. Learn it even not for the sake of the mitzvah, learn it even for the sake of kavod. But the result will be that if you learn Torah, shelo lishma, not for the sake of mitzvah, keep learning it, and the delight of Torah itself will bring you to a height where you'll realize the kedushah of Torah. You learn it lishma, you'll come back to me, Hashem says. If you leave the Torah, you have no way to ever get back to Hashem. So therefore Hashem says, I can forgive anything, the worst crimes. But if a Jew leaves Torah, if a Jew shows disrespect, a dislike, or belittling of the study of Torah, that person, Hashem says, I despise. Ma'asu'oti, they despise my Torah, I despise them in return, and I will never forgive them for that. This is the main cause of the Churban and the main cause of the Jews going in Gilut. This is the lesson, the final word that the Yemeneh says. Person should never allow himself to be absent from Torah under any conditions. The key, the door, the entrance to the Beit HaMikdash, to the home of Hashem, is Torah. The way to get close to Hashem, the way to become, to find favor in the eyes of Hashem, is by learning His Torah. Now we begin again the Talmud Bavli. The Gemara says there is a pasuk in the Chumash, Ish imo v'aviv tira'u. Each one should respect, fear his parents. V'yet shabtotai tishmoru, and you should observe Shabbat. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, Elokechem, your Hashem. Elokechem is plural. I am your Hashem, all of you. Hashem of all. The Gemara says, what does this pasuk teach us? That if one's parents, if a father says to a son, you are my son, I am a Kohen, you are also a Kohen. A Kohen is not allowed to go to a cemetery. A Kohen is not allowed to go near a dead body, a room where there is a dead body. But as your father, to mitzvah to obey me, I tell you, go into this room where the dead body is. Which means break that law, but your father telling you this. Or, the Torah says, if you find an article that's lost, you have a chance to return it to its owner. That's a mitzvah to Torah. The father says, do not return that article because I don't like this person who owned it. I want you to leave it alone. Don't return it. Here you have a case of a father who told his son to break two laws, which are major laws, laws part of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, but they are not death penalty laws. Here Hashem says, I am Hashem of all of you. I am the Hashem of you and your parents. I am their master too. They can tell you to do something. Certainly you must obey them. But only when they tell you to do something that's not against my wishes, they rebel against me. Remember that I am their master also. You cannot follow them to commit an act of treason against me. Same thing too. The Gemara says we find a pasuk which says, "Et shabtotai tishmoru, observe my Shabbat, umikdashi tira'u, and fear, respect my Bet HaMikdash." Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Again, this means, it says, fear my Beit HaMikdash. Does that mean you have to fear the Beit HaMikdash? You have to bow down to it, to worship it? Of course not. The same as you cannot bow down to the Shabbat. You have to respect the Shabbat, meaning respect he who ordered the Shabbat to be obeyed. You also have to respect the Mikdash, meaning respect Hashem, who gave you the Kedusha, the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash. How do you show this respect for the Beit HaMikdash, which the Gemara says, by the way, refers not just to the Beit HaMikdash, but to every Beit HaMikdash mi'at, any holy place, like a Knis, or a Beit Midrash, a Yeshiva, any place that's holy has the same rules as the Beit HaMikdash. You're not allowed to go into the Beit HaMikdash, or a shul, with clothing that's not respectable. You must put on decent clothing to appear before Hashem dressed nicely. You're going into the palace of the king. You're not allowed to go there with dust, dirt, grime. You have to wash yourself off first. You cannot use the shul, the knis, for your purpose, meaning that you have to go from one block to the next, and there's a shortcut to go through the shul. Instead of going all around the block, go through the shul, you come out on the other block. This is using the shul for a shortcut. This is desecrating the kedusha of the shul for your own needs. And therefore, that too is forbidden. If, let's say, a person has to do this, the Shulchan Aruch says, go into the shul, sit down, say a pasuk, a word of Torah, so you've entered for the sake of Torah. Then you can leave through the shortcut. At least you have done the mitzvah of respecting the shul and using it for its correct purpose. So therefore, just as the Shabbat is something that is eternal, the Mitzvah of Shabbat will never end, so too does the mitzvah of the Beit HaMikdash never end. Even when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, that same rule applies to this day, that these, for any shul too, these laws of respect for a shul are just as great as the respect for the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, too, the Din stresses, when we say respect for the Beit HaMikdash, it means the Beit HaMikdash in its present form. Presently, we haven't got it. It's destroyed. There's no trace of it as far as our eyes could see. Though you cannot see it, you still must respect that spot of the Beit HaMikdash, so that the laws of Tum'ah exist today. One who is Tameh impure cannot enter into the Beit HaMikdash at any time then, on the penalty of death, today too, a person who is Tameh is not allowed to walk on the grounds of the Beit HaMikdash, because that is an Isur of Chayav Mitah, a death penalty for it. The same respect, the same law applies always, just as when the Beit HaMikdash stood. Now we go on to a topic that requires, sadly, it requires concentration. And I want to see alert expressions. Let's first explain the topic. This discusses the mitzvah of Yibum. Go around this so that every child can understand it. Remember that the Torah says you cannot learn Torah with your ears alone. You must learn Torah with your eyes. So even if you claim that you are wide awake, but your eyes are closed, you cannot absorb Torah. The eyes are the window of the soul. Torah is learned with the soul, that means with the eyes. You must have your eyes open and your brain wide awake. Some persons sleep with their eyes open too. Now this is the topic is Yibum, which means that, let's take names. You have two brothers, we will call them Reuven and Shimon, the first two sons of Yaakov. Reuven and Shimon are two brothers. Both are married. Shimon dies, and he leaves behind a widow, but he leaves no children. The law now is the law of Yibum or Chalitza, means that the living brother Reuven must marry the wife of the dead brother Shimon. That's called Yibum. He must marry her so that when they have a child, he can take the place of her past husband. He did not leave any children after him, Shimon. So when the child is born, through Reuven, his brother, Reuven will help to rebuild his name. That's if he wants to marry her. If not, he must give her chalitza, which means sort of a divorce. Because the minute that his brother Shimon died, it is as though that moment she became engaged to him. Practically married. Once she's engaged to him, she cannot marry anybody else. That's like adultery. So either he completes it, he consummates it by the actual marriage, or he gives a chalitza, which is tantamount to divorce. It is so much alike, similar to divorce, that a woman who is given chalitza could not marry a kohen. A kohen cannot marry a divorcee. He cannot marry a woman that had chalitza. It's the same as divorce. So again, let's make that point clear. This is, of course, understood only where the dead person left no children. If he has children, all this falls away. Again, if Shimon died, Reuven must marry Shimon's wife. That's the simple case. Let's go into the next step. Let us say that Shimon has two wives. In those days, a man can marry more than one wife. Shimon has two wives. He is not required to marry both of them. If he marries one, he has performed the mitzvah. The second one is free. But now the case that we are dealing with is, let's start again. Reuven is married. He has a young brother, Shimon, very young. Yovel is married, and he has a daughter is born to him. This daughter grows up, and Shimon decides to marry Reuven's daughter. It's a mitzvah for an uncle to marry a niece. So now you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is married. Shimon marries Reuven's daughter. At the same time, Reuven also, Shimon, who married Reuven's daughter, also marries another woman. Now, let's say, let's go back to this first case. Shimon married Reuven's daughter, and Shimon dies. He just had that one wife, Reuven's daughter. If Shimon dies, could Reuven now marry Shimon's wife? He could not. It's his daughter. It's impossible. Therefore, as long as it's impossible to marry her, she does not require chalitza, a divorce either. There's no mitzvah of ibum at all, because it's his daughter. In this case, Shimon's wife is free. No obligation. She's not engaged automatically to Reuven, because that's her father. So in this case, where the wife of his brother, the wife of Shimon, is Reuven's own daughter, no law of ibum at all. Now, let's take the second case we said. What if Shimon had two wives? He married Reuven's daughter, and he also had a second wife who was not related to Reuven at all. Here we have a problem. Do we say that because one of Shimon's wife is Reuven's daughter, and therefore she cannot be married to Reuven, this would free Reuven from all obligation to his brother, all the wives become free, or is there no connection? That one wife is his daughter, he cannot marry her, but the second wife, which is not related, he could. Here we have a machloket between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. Bet Hillel say, and of course this is the law, that the Tzarat Habat is Sarat Habat is Utenet, which means when a man has one wife, his first wife, she's Ishto, his wife. What do we call a second wife? A Tzara. Tzara means trouble. A man has a second wife, there's always trouble. This causes conflict and jealousy between the wives.